You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Governor Evers is calling the state legislature into a special session to deal with gun violence. We'll talk about what's at stake and how it could play out. Now, Wisconsin's population on the whole is getting older. That's especially true when it comes to the state's workforce. According to data from the U.S. Census, the state's working age population has shrunk by roughly 35,000 since peaking in 2011, and the workforce population has declined every year for the past 4 years. The shift overall is small, but it could spell issues for the state's economy in the future, especially as fewer young people take or create jobs and as the state's baby boomers continue to retire. Our next guest joins us to break down the data and lay out possible solutions to bolster the state's economic health. Joe Pietrangelo is a senior researcher for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Joe, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, spell out this labor pool decline in Wisconsin. You've been analyzing this at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. What are we seeing?
Yeah, just like you said, after we had decades of growth in the working age population, just in the last several years, there's been a decline. So these are trends that we saw coming, but now what we're seeing is it's actually playing out across the state. It affects some counties more than others, but what it means is fewer total people in the 18 to 64 age group, which is the population that is critical to the workforce and to filling and creating new jobs.
Just yesterday, we talked about a new report from a group with the Wisconsin Counties Association showing that the number of deaths is on track if trends continue to exceed the number of births in Wisconsin. Well, that's one demographic factor. What are you seeing, Joe, when it comes to the reasons behind this decline in the state's working age population?
Yeah, there are a number of factors. That is one of the ones, as you mentioned, is the low birth rate. So the birth rate and the fertility rate, which is related, are down from the past. So fewer babies being born by younger generations. And with Wisconsin, most of the population is native to the state. We don't have a strong attraction of people from other states. So we actually have seen in other research we've done that Wisconsin has a net migration loss, meaning more people move away from Wisconsin than to the state. So we really rely on the population that grows up here to stay here and, you know, in terms of our economy to enter the workforce. And so having lower birth rate affects that. The net migration issue is just another major factor in the challenge for the state.
And can you talk about our age profile in the state? It seems like, according to your research and others, we are just on average getting older.
Right. You know, we have fewer working age people, like I said, but we also looked at the population under 18. So, you know, to look at longer term, can we expect this this decline to end? And unfortunately, we found that's not likely because the population under 18 has actually shrunk by a larger percentage than the working age population. So the younger people coming up are even smaller group, and so we're likely to see this trend continue well into the future.
Are we feeling an economic impact from this decline in the working age population right now, 2019?
It's hard to say. I can't really, you know, say whether that how big of an impact it's having right now. Certainly, you know, there are, you know, concerns about filling jobs. We have a very low unemployment rate statewide right now, and you're hearing more from employers that they're having challenges finding workers. I can't really put any numbers behind, you know, the impact that that's having, but you see, for example, here in Milwaukee, there's an effort, a regional effort here that just was announced by the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce and the Milwaukee 7 Economic Development Organization to try to retain and attract talent to the region. So it's a new effort where companies are coming together and working together to try to strengthen connections with the local schools and colleges and to attract and upskill, attract new workers and upskill current workers, because they're seeing challenges throughout the regional economy and are finding they want to actually work together to improve the talent pipeline. So certainly there is evidence that this is having an effect already on the economy.
Talking to Joe Pietrangelo from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, talking about Wisconsin's declining over the last few years working age population, the possible consequences of it, and possible solutions. Joe, let's talk about some ways we can tackle this problem. You mentioned earlier we have a thing where more young people are leaving the state than are coming in. As I understand it, young people aren't streaming out of Wisconsin. There just aren't very many people coming in either. What are some possible solutions to that, to keep younger people here and to lure them in?
Yeah, we don't have all the answers for that, but I do have, we have looked at a few options. Like you said, we have, it's not that people are moving away. We actually are pretty good at retaining people in Wisconsin, but we don't attract a lot of people from outside. So there's a gap there. And we've also done research and looked at national research that shows that Wisconsin, the people who move into the state tend to be less highly educated than the people who move out of the state. So that's another challenge that in terms of filling more skilled types of jobs, that's another factor that we're seeing out there. One way, that we could attract more people from outside of the state would be through the UW system. There has been some increased enrollment of students from outside of the state in recent years, which has mainly been, I believe, more of a reaction to the tuition cap on in-state students, where the UW system has started to enroll more out-of-state students where they don't have that same tuition freeze as a way to help with their budgets. But that could actually be a strategy for attracting people from outside of the state, and then there would also have to be efforts to keep them in Wisconsin. But certainly the UW system is one way to bring more people in.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Cindy is with us in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, in some respects, this is a good thing because there's a lot of us older people. I just retired from a full-time job, and I'm not ready to hang it up yet, so I do have a part-time job that I transitioned to, but a lot of my friends have been bought out early, from their jobs because they obviously wanted to clean house on the older people, so that leaves opportunities for the older people to still, have another job, maybe not as great as the last one, but at least something.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. Joe, maybe good for older people and maybe part of the solution if we're looking at a labor shortage in coming years.
That is true. And actually, the trend has been increasing in terms of participation by seniors in the labor force. Nationally, that's gone up significantly, and here in Wisconsin. So definitely that could continue well into the future. More seniors are wanting to work. And one thing that we think could be effective would be for more employers to have more flexible types of options for seniors to stay in the workforce longer. That could definitely be part of the solution.
Thanks for the call, Cindy. Joe, are there other parts of the population that are maybe undertapped, underutilized in our workforce that we could be reaching out to?
In addition to maybe needing to rely more on seniors, the younger populations, there's been a decline in teen workforce participation for a couple of decades nationally and in Wisconsin. So right now, just over half of teens are participating in the workforce in Wisconsin. That's way down from the past, like I said. And so tapping them more could be one one pool. Another is people with criminal records, that there have been some efforts at the state level to try to reduce barriers imposed by criminal records, trying to expand access to expungement, for example, of certain lower level criminal records in order to have people's records be more to be clear, and for that not to pose a challenge when they go to look for work. There are other efforts. The state has started to incorporate more services into correctional facilities to prepare people for when they come out, to come back into the workforce. That's another place that we could focus, is trying to employ those who are on the sidelines still currently.
We're talking to Joe Pietrangelo, senior researcher for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. He's with us to talk about a new report that finds the state's workforce is aging and the impact that could have on the state's economy in the future. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think it would take to encourage young people to stay in Wisconsin or to move from outside the state? If you are 18 to, I don't know, 40 or so, will you stay or will you go? Are you concerned about the state's future economy? If you're an employer, what are you watching for? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation with Joe Pietrangelo of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. He wrote a recent piece on the state's aging workforce, a decline in the number of people in the working age population, and how it could affect our economy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this research? What steps do you think employers or maybe the state could take to grow the state's workforce? If you are a younger worker yourself, what thoughts do you have about the state of work in Wisconsin and whether you want to stick around to see the future in the state? Are you an employer? What are you seeing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Back to your calls now. Owen is with us in Wyawega. Owen, hi.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. So I think there's an entire demographic here that we're failing to recognize, and there's a demographic that I work with in the agricultural sector that is all under the age of 30 that would all like to be citizens. Unfortunately, they know they're not eligible to become citizens, so they're spending most of their earnings back in a foreign country that they're citizens of, even though they reside here permanently. They need to be given an opportunity. Politicians don't want to change the way things are operating now, and they don't want to bring that demographic in as an enfranchised sector of our economy. I feel that would be really good to stimulate growth and long-term commitments here in the state of Wisconsin. I also believe expungement for minor things like OWI, first and second offense, things like that, all needs to be put on the table, because employers do fail to hire people just for those type of infractions on their record, which are now, I think, on there for life. So.
Owen, thanks a lot for the call. So Owen's saying immigrants could be part of this, some of them already here, maybe undocumented or with a non-citizen status that makes it harder for them to stay. What do you think, Joe?
Yeah, that would, of course, have to be done at the federal level, but immigration could be another part of this. We actually saw some, there's been some interesting national bipartisan proposals out there to have some targeted immigration that would focus on filling some of the gaps that are occurring not just in Wisconsin, but sort of a lot of these northern states. There's this proposal out there called the Heartland Visa that the Economic Innovation Group has put out there, and that would really target workers from abroad to places that are in need of workers. And so there would be, it would of course have to start at the federal level with something created there, and then states and local governments could participate and have criteria as well. But also, like the caller said, there could be broader immigration reform for that would affect the population that's already here in the country.
Thanks for the call, Owen. We go now to Michelle with us in Two Rivers. Michelle, hi.
Hi. So I was just going to add that another growing group of individuals that are in need of work and desperately looking for work are recovering addicts. So I volunteer for the Manitowoc County Drug Court Program, and so I know from participants and also others that are not necessarily participants of the program, but that are recovering addicts that are in need of jobs. So,
Michelle, thanks for the call. Joe, I can't remember if you wrote about that particular group in your piece, but do you think that could be one piece of the puzzle here?
Yeah, that's a population I hadn't really focused on, and but certainly that's an interesting point, and could be another pool. There's also overlap between, in some cases, between people who have criminal records, and so there may be ways that population could be part of it as well.
Michelle, thanks for that call. We're talking to Joe Pietrangelo from the Wisconsin Policy Forum about Wisconsin's aging workforce, decline in the number of working age people in the state. What, if anything, can be done about it? The number is 800-642-1234. If you want to join in, back to your calls. Emily is with us now in Madison. Emily, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I'm an artist and a textile and fashion designer, and I have just graduated recently with my master's degree. And a lot of the art students leave town because there aren't enough opportunities. And I would love to see the state get more involved in increasing those opportunities. And I know, for instance, that Wisconsin offers about 11 cents per capita for the arts, whereas Minnesota offers about $6 or $7 per capita.
Emily, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, Emily, thanks a lot for calling. So, Joe, people talk about the creative economy a lot as a way to lure not just the artists themselves, but other people, entrepreneurs and others. Emily saying Wisconsin maybe isn't doing a great job of that.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point. I haven't looked at that specifically, but, certain parts of the state are certainly kind of benefiting more from the creative economy. I think places like Madison, the Eau Claire area has been really focusing on arts as a part of its economy. But I haven't looked at that specifically in terms of how the state handles it. That's an interesting point.
Emily, thanks for the call. Joe, speaking of Madison, there are a handful of counties that seem to be bucking the trend, having small increases in working age population. And then there's Dane County, where Madison is, really looks like an outlier compared to the rest of the state. What do you see there?
Yeah, no, that was one of the interesting parts of our research, was just seeing the differences by county across the state. Dane bucked the trend more than any other county. The working age population has grown by about almost 5% since 2011. The youth population has grown as well by about the same percentage in Dane County. So that means longer term, it's looking positive for continued growth. I think in Dane County, you've obviously got UW-Madison that draws students in from within the state and from outside of the state. And then Madison also seems to do a good job of retaining those graduates in the community. There are some other exceptions. The Appleton area and Green Bay seem to have, they haven't lost at least working age population. And some places that are near, so like Kenosha County and St. Croix County, which are actually kind of within the Chicago and Twin Cities metro areas, they've grown their working age population, but that may be influenced because there are people living in those places that are commuting into those major metro areas. So they're kind of outliers. But so we see a lot of variation across the state. On the other hand, there are counties like Wood County and Manitowoc County. They've seen the biggest declines in their working age population as a percentage.
Let's bring on another caller now. Gwen joins us in Madison. Gwen, hi.
Hello. I'm one of the people who's going to be retiring, but I grew up in Milwaukee, and this was in like the 1950s when I was born in 60s. And back then, they had Milwaukee Tech. It used to be Boys Tech. And they worked with industry hand in hand to help train the students and provide apprenticeships for students for the types of jobs that employers were looking to fill. Now, if we invest in our public schools and if we can nurture business school partnerships with industry again for the types of jobs that are needed in the economy, I think when you look to urban areas like Milwaukee and Racine and Madison and Wausau, all of your cities, I think you would find you have enough people, but you have to give them the opportunity. The kids won't stay if they don't see a place where they're going to get a job.
Interesting, Gwen. Thanks for the call. Joe, what do you think? I hear you sort of nodding along there.
Yeah, well, that's kind of relates to what I had mentioned, that there's this new initiative here in Milwaukee that it's called the Talent and Industry Partnership, and that is all of these businesses in the Milwaukee area that are working together and then connecting with the local high schools and colleges and trying to make more of those direct connections for the students so that they know there is a career path right in the Milwaukee area. Part of it here is there's all these changes happening with technology and automation, changes to the manufacturing industry and other industries that where the existing workforce needs to learn new skills, but also the students, as the caller said, the high school students and college students need to know what the careers are, what the needs are for them to be prepared for the careers that are right here in the area.
We'll leave it there for now. Joe, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Joe Pietrangelo, senior researcher for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. He joined us today to talk about one of the latest reports from the group, and he's written about this as well. It examines the state's aging workforce and the potential impact it could have on Wisconsin's economy. You can keep sharing your thoughts as a worker or employer. Email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Coming up, we'll talk about next month's special session of the state legislature on gun violence and why it might be over as soon as it starts. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, the White House isn't cooperating with an impeachment inquiry in Congress. That has some people asking, can they do that? A law professor breaks down what's fair political strategy and what defies the Constitution. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, Governor Evers signed an order yesterday calling the state legislature into a special session starting on November 7th to address gun violence. Evers hopes lawmakers will vote on two bills, one to require background checks for most private gun sales, and another to create a red flag law that would allow authorities to take guns away from someone a judge has decided poses a threat to themselves or others. Republican leaders in the Assembly and Senate responded that they won't consider the bills and expect to end the special session almost as soon as it starts. The governor said if that happens, he plans to keep pressing the issue. Maurice Shepard is an instructor of political science at Madison College. He's with us now in the studio. Maurice, thanks a lot for joining us again on Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, can you start by giving us a refresher on a special session in the state legislature? When does that happen?
Sure. Well, Wisconsin is one of 10 states that has a full-time legislature. Across the country, many states have, once again, a mechanism to have a special session of the legislature. So in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin State Constitution provides for the governor and also for the state legislature itself to call for a special session. In the Wisconsin Constitution, I think it's Article 5, Section 4, which actually gives, once again, the governor that power, and then also Article 6, Section 11, that mandates that once that special session begins, that it focus narrowly on a particular on the particular issue that the governor or the legislature has called for.
So generally, governors aren't going to say, we're going to have a special session just for general stuff. It's going to be for a particular issue or maybe a package of bills.
Correct. And in Wisconsin, again, it's a little different, Wisconsin being one of the 10 states that has a full-time legislature. In states that have part-time legislatures, the special sessions are fairly regular that if, for example, there's a natural disaster, something that needs urgent attention, or if there's a budget issue. For states that have part-time legislatures, special sessions are more usual. And with full-time sessions, there can be, and there are those that argue that having a special session with a full-time state legislature may not be necessary. So there are other, other than, once again, natural disasters and that sort, others say that there may be politics involved here.
Well, and the gun issue, there are a lot of politics involved there. What do you make of Governor Evers calling a special session on the gun issue and on two particular bills in this session?
Well, I think in terms of timing, for Governor Evers, we're at just past the 20-year mark of Columbine, again, that tragedy, and then most recently in the news, El Paso, and then the shootings in Dayton. And I think for Governor Evers, he believes and he sees this as a public safety issue to address, once again, the sort of gun control or gun issue. And he hasn't had a lot of, in the political science world and public policy, we talk about issues that when they're just a condition, they're manageable. So maybe up until fairly recently for Governor Evers, he saw that, okay, this is a condition that we need to address. But with, again, the more recent acts of violence, particularly in schools and also in Dayton and El Paso, he sees it now as a problem. Therefore, he needs to take immediate action to address this.
Let's take a listen to Governor Evers yesterday announcing this special session, talking about what he wants to see from the other side of the aisle.
I want Republicans and the legislature to work with Democrats to send these bills to my desk. And if they're not willing to do so, then every single member of the legislature should have the opportunity to vote on it and have their vote speak for itself.
So there's the public safety issue itself, but that also sounds like, hey, I want people on record voting on this maybe in time for 2020 elections. Evers thinks that on these issues, maybe the political support is on his side and he wants to have them in his toolkit for the election.
And in terms of for Governor Evers, that he has public opinion on his side. One of the latest Marquette polls show that about 80% of Wisconsinites across the board support some form as they would call it, sort of common sense gun regulation. And that even holds up under, once again, gun owners. So this isn't just sort of non-gun owners that believe that that something needs to be done in this area. Again, there are also the gun owners that support it. And Wisconsin, compared to other states, we're Connecticut, I think, was one of the first states to have something like, once again, the red flag laws, and there are other states that have it. So I think the two pieces of legislation that the governor is looking to address during the special session, in some ways, Wisconsin is not leading the way here. There are other states that have already blazed the trail.
Talking to Maurice Shepherd from Madison College, looking at a special session of the state legislature called by Governor Evers, looking at issues related to guns, gun control, and gun violence. Today, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, the Republican leader of the Senate, said he expects to gavel a session to a close shortly after it opens without a vote. We're hearing the Assembly, they're saying, Robin Voss, Assembly Speaker, says, yeah, these aren't going to get voted on. What do you make of the Republican response to these proposals?
Well, in terms of before even the Republican response, when you have a special session for Governor Evers, there's a great deal of uncertainty there. There's nothing guaranteed that they have to, once again, for the Republicans who control both the upper chamber and the lower chamber of the state legislature, that they actually have to act on this. So there's a bit of a gamble there. And I think in terms of public statements by some of the Republican leaders, they're really looking at this. They are sincere in terms of protecting, once again, looking after public safety. But for them, there's also a number of constitutional issues, Second Amendment rights, and also due process rights.
Republican Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke joined the morning show earlier today here on the Ideas Network. He said he was bringing forth legislation to focus on what he called the root causes of shootings. Here's a listen.
I'm going to be announcing a bill here in the next couple of weeks that will develop a pilot program to deliver mental health care access directly into the schools in a way that we haven't done before, so that schools can get the help that they need when dealing with these kids that are presenting with mental health issues early on in life. I think that's where we really need to attack the problem.
So even if the proposals Governor Evers is pushing for don't happen, that sounds like the kind of thing that Democrats and Republicans might both buy into, providing better mental health access to kids.
Right. And for the Republican legislators, they have a history of, again, supporting and putting forward legislation to address this issue. After Columbine, Republicans in the state legislature put forward the creation of a 1-800 number so that students can use to basically provide information if they felt that there was a shooter maybe, once again, in the building or someone was posing a threat. They also provided some legislation that directed more policies toward behavioral issues, asking parents to sort of monitor their children's internet use, the viewing of dangerous video. So the Republicans in Wisconsin have a history of attempting to address this issue.
Now let's look at the proposals that Evers is putting forward. The background check one would expand who has to provide a background check when a gun is purchased. Right now, federally licensed dealers have to. This would expand background checks to include most, but not all, private sales of guns. There would be exemptions, I think, for family-to-family transfers, some kinds of antiques, things like that. It closes what some people call the gun show loophole. I'm throwing up air quotes there because a lot of times it doesn't actually happen at a gun show, for example. That, as I understand it, that's the background check expansion that the governor's looking for. Is that about right?
That's about right. And in terms of that, there, in terms of some of the Republicans, I think for Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, he makes the point, and he said this recently, that he does support some possible enhanced, once again, background check and that sort of thing. But he believes that the existing law, what we already have on the books, is sufficient, that what we need to do is focus on the enforcement of it, maybe, once again, additional resources and that sort. So, again, there's common ground in terms of wanting to do something. Again, the conflict is in terms of how do we move forward.
And the red flag law, this says a judge would have to sign off on it if police or family members raise concerns. I worry this person is going to harm themselves or others. They need their firearms to be separated from them in some way. As you say, this is something that's happened in other states, but you mentioned concerns about due process. And it seems like that's where people might object to this particular provision.
Exactly, in terms of how do you decide which person is more threatening than another. And the other point that Republican leaders bring up is for these two particular pieces of legislation that will be addressed during the special session, they argue that there's no real evidence to show that these produce sort of the outcomes or the findings that the governor and Democrats that are also once again support this legislation that they claim it provides, that, it's legislation. It will make people feel good, but there's no real evidence to show that it will actually produce the outcomes that folks say.
We're talking to Maurice Shepard, political science instructor at Madison College, looking at Governor Evers' announcement of a special session of the legislature to deal with issues related to gun violence and two specific pieces of legislation, expanding background checks and the red flag law we were just talking about. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the governor calling this special session? Do you think there needs to be urgency on gun violence issues? What do you think of these two particular ideas, expanding background checks to include more private sales than it currently does, or this red flag law? What do you think of opposition from Republican lawmakers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Maurice Shepard from the Political Science Department at Madison College, talking about the special legislative session on gun violence called by Governor Evers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the governor's decision to call for this special session next month? What, if anything, do you want to see come out of it? What do you want to see from Republicans in the legislature? Do you think there are places that the two parties can work together, even though they say there are many places where they can't? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Matt is with us in Wynn Lake. Matt, hi.
Hi. I agree with Mr. Shepard on that a lot of these laws have been proven. They'll just make us feel better. But there's really no evidence that shows that it will change anything. I think what our legislators need to do is get back to work. This is a fall session. It's about people control. It's restricting our rights, Second Amendment, thou shalt not be infringed. And the other thing with that is that, you know, these red flag laws, it does take away people's rights and due process, as you had mentioned earlier. It's really about narratives from the left that are trying to have people control. If you can get an emotional conversation, it gets people to agree with you with that false sense of security. And, you know, not only with that, but also with free speech. You know, now there's coming up this big movement of hate speech. There is no such thing as hate speech.
Matt, thanks for the call. I want to stick with the gun issue in the legislature now. Matt pointing to the Second Amendment part that says shall not be infringed. Of course, a lot of people point to the part that says well regulated as a window to allow some form of regulation. And it's going to be hard to resolve anytime soon, Maurice.
Yeah, and there have been a number of Supreme Court cases that that have dealt with, once again, the Second Amendment. If I can just comment quickly on something that Matt's point, again, and as you referenced sort of my comment in terms of, again, sort of the possible lack of evidence in terms of these pieces of legislation producing the outcomes that they actually want. The one thing I will say that could be a benefit in terms of this special session of the state legislature is that, and again, this may be part of Governor Evers' sort of plan, is that you're forcing, one, attention on this particular issue. And two, if you can at least get in the room and talk, sometimes, you know, magic can happen. So even right now before, once again, November 7th, when once again the special session takes place, you know, if once again for members of the state legislature, Democrats and Republicans, if they can get in the room and at least begin to consider, you know, they can sort of look at where there is common ground, not just focus on where they have differences, but again, where can they meet?
Thanks a lot for that call, Matt. We'll go to another Matt now in Waukesha. Matt, hi.
Hey, so I went to Wauwatosa West High School in the early to mid-90s. I graduated in 95. I was there in 93 when a former student walked in and gunned down the associate principal, Dale Brightlow, killed him in the hallway. If there had been some sort of red flag warning at the time, the gunman, Leonard McDowell, would not have been able to get his hands on a weapon, which ultimately changed the lives of literally thousands of students in the Wauwatosa School District, as well as a whole bunch of other surrounding areas, because it was just insane. And then I end up going to college and I watched the Columbine thing when I'm up at UW-Madison. And it's like, how many times do we have to keep watching this? Because if we sit here and keep doing nothing, we will accomplish exactly that, nothing. And something needs to be done.
Matt, thanks a lot for the call. Maurice?
Again, the other Matt here hit on an important point that, you know, something in terms of this has gone from a condition to a problem. And for Republicans, even though right now current Republican leadership makes the argument that, again, new legislation isn't necessary, the Republican Party has been in the past, they have put forward legislation. I think it was in 2018, Governor Walker called a special session to actually provide additional funding for safer schools, whereas I think it was possibly $100 million for schools around the state. They could apply once again for this money to improve the building security, to hire resource officers, and provide additional safety training opportunities for security and staff. So This is a problem. And at least on the Republican side, you know, they have taken in the past some steps toward trying to address this.
Matt, thanks for sharing that story. We are talking about Governor Evers' call of a special session in the state legislature focused on gun violence issues, looking for two pieces of legislation in particular, expanding background checks on firearm purchases and creating red flag laws here in Wisconsin. Back to your calls now. Mary Ann is with us in La Crosse. Mary Ann, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and say I wholeheartedly, as a mother and as a woman and as an active voter, support Governor Evers, and I thank God he is doing something. Even if the Republicans in power do nothing, he is bringing attention to this issue, and the overwhelming majority of citizens in Wisconsin want these laws changed. They want these laws passed. So I'll be honest, I have a son in elementary school. I am not interested in arming teachers. I'm not interested in lockdown drills. I'm not interested in security personnel with guns at entrances to schools. So the comment of your guest that, yes, under Governor Walker, huge incentive to try to just make our schools into prisons instead of addressing the problem. And yes, will this solve everything? No. But if it saves the person, Matt, who called in earlier, the assistant principal, if it saves one life, if the red flag law would have saved that person's life and a whole community would not be in mourning as a result of it, it's worth it, folks. It's a start.
Marianne,
and if the Republicans want to solve the problem, then keep going in that direction farther than Governor Evers and get these assault weapons off our streets.
Marianne, thanks for the call. Maurice, your thoughts?
In terms of public policy, literature, how policies are made and that sort, one idea is sort of incrementalism. And some of the research in terms of not just sort of gun control, but developing public policy in general, that public policy, if it's gun, once again, gun violence or anything else related to that, that these are complex issues. The gun debate, I think, is also, again, sort of important as it relates to constitutional rights. So by having a special session for Governor Evers, he can once again focus a spotlight on this issue. There is, and there may be once again, a political benefit for him and the Democratic Party. You know, this is politics. You can't move away from that. But also, again, you never know what will happen. If they have this session, there could be incremental change. Again, there may not be that single piece of policy that addresses the issue for now and forever, but maybe something can happen. We can get on the path toward maybe having some workable policies that will address the issue.
Marianne, thanks for the call. Marianne mentioned assault rifles, and one thing that's not on the governor's list here is the idea of mandatory buybacks of assault rifles, however those get defined. That would require some careful legislating there, I guess. He had hinted he might consider that last month. He hasn't included that in this special session.
Yeah, and I'm not sure in terms of the research on that, how effective that is in terms of, once again, buybacks. But also, as a researcher myself, one of the issues in terms of buybacks, it would require more government expenditure. Again, for voters and for elected officials, they have to make that decision. Will the additional, once again, funds and resources to put in to implement that policy, to carry it out and that sort, is that, once again, is that cost worth the benefit?
Thanks again for the call. Have you seen the dynamics of the gun debate changing? Because I think a lot of times there's been the idea that there's obviously a very strong pro-Second Amendment movement that has is pretty politically powerful. There might be people on the other side who also feel strongly but not as well organized politically. Do you see that changing, especially since the Parkland, Florida shootings?
I think that for most, and I am a starry-eyed sort of optimist, so I'll just sort of lay that out. But I think there is, once again, room that there's common ground. If you're, again, if you support, once again, sort of the Second Amendment, or if you're not, once again, part of the gun culture, there is common ground there in terms of that, you know, particularly little children should not have to go to school and worry about being, once again, not coming home. That is not just a public safety issue, but that's, once again, a moral issue, I think, that our elected officials have to and our society needs to deal with.
Maurice, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Maurice Shepard, instructor of political science at Madison College. He was with us to talk about Governor Evers' announcement yesterday that he's calling the legislature into a special session next month to consider two bills meant to curb gun violence. Republican leaders say those bills won't make it to a vote when they do convene. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, U.S. diplomats are testifying on Capitol Hill as part of the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump. We'll get the latest on that and other top stories in national politics. As a mysterious illness linked to vaping continues to spread, a Wisconsin doctor gives us the inside story on the first signs of the disease here in the state. And we'll meet a teenager from Eau Claire who's headed to the Youth Olympic Games in curling. All that, plus a look at some of the top news stories of the day, coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Tomorrow at 7, we're talking with renowned author Tim O'Brien. He's known for stories written about the horrors of war, but now he gets personal, opening up about being a father. Join the conversation with Tim O'Brien. That's tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then political polarization can feel like it's past the point of no return. But our guest says when you get people together to talk things out, the results might surprise you. We'll find out more about the concept of deliberative democracy. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.